I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. Back in 2000, Davy Rothbart was having a very bad day. He got in his car and saw what he thought was a parking ticket on the windshield. It turned out to be this note, which I have cleaned up for broadcast. Mario, I hate you. You said you had to work. Then why is your car here, parked at her place? You're a liar. I hate you. I hate you. Amber. P.S. Page me later. Well, that note was a life changer. Rothbart began collecting more letters, lists, and messages that he and others found on the street, provocative bits and pieces of strangers' lives. Then came a magazine, several books, a podcast, and now a musical, all called Found. Davy Rothbart has been featured on This American Life, and the Philadelphia Theater Company is presenting Found at the Suzanne Roberts Theater through December 11th. And Davy Rothbart joins us on Radio Times, and nice to have you with us on the show.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. So what's left? You got the magazine, you got the podcast, you got This American Life, you got the book, you got the musical. What else is on your list of to-do things?
Well, I'm really interested in documentary film, and I made a documentary a couple of years ago called Medora. It's kind of about a basketball team in a small town in Indiana and kind of the plight of some of these small towns that are kind of literally fading off the map. And I'm working on a new documentary. I've actually been filming it for the last 17 years.
17 years.
Yeah, about a family in Washington, D.C., kind of in southeast D.C., a pretty tough part of town. And anyways, that's what I'm working on now, besides all this Found stuff.
And I have to say to our listeners, Davy has strewn all these Found letters, which we'll be reading during this hour of Radio Times. So what did you think you were going to be or do when you grew up, when you were little, and you thought, I'm going to be a Blanc?
I wanted to be either a writer or an NBA player. I realized pretty quickly that my NBA dream wasn't going to work out.
Not quite the height?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I can't dunk a basketball. Can shoot okay. But I sort of started just writing stories and connecting with people, you know, asking people to share their stories with me. And that's kind of been the through line through all the kind of work I've done.
Do you believe in serendipity? I mean, I'm just thinking about this note. I know you've talked a lot about it, but you're not Mario, but this was a note that someone stuck in your car thinking it was Mario's car.
It really sparked Found Magazine and the Found, you know, all the way to where we are today with the Found musical at the Philadelphia Theater Company. I mean, it started just with a note on my car. And my name's not Mario, it's Davy, but I thought I'd open it anyway. And once I read that, you know, I hate you, signed Amber, P.S., page me later.
Yeah.
It just, you know, I started showing it to my friends, and they started showing me stuff they had found. And sometimes people would have on their fridge, like, a Polaroid they found in the gutter or a kid's drawing. And I just thought, there's got to be a way for everybody to share this stuff with everybody else. So that was the idea. Found Magazine would be something we could, you know, a place for people to share their finds with each other. It just, you know, my ambitions were to make a little zine, like 50 copies. But once people started seeing it, It just grew in ways I never expected.
So where did this idea of a musical come from? Whose idea was that?
My brother Peter and I used to tour the country doing these live Found Magazine shows where I would read some of the finds. My brother would play these great songs based on the finds. And a producer named Victoria Lang saw one of our live shows, and she just immediately thought, this should be a theater. You know, this should be a performance piece, a play, a musical. And so she got some other great people involved, Jamie Salka and Lee Overtree. They have a thing called the Story Pirates in New York City where they do these improvised musical plays based on kids' stories, like a one-page story that some kid in Harlem might have written. They'll turn it into this giant musical performance, and it blows the kids' mind, of course, and they do amazing work. So I realized that they could transform these finds in the same way. All of these notes, hilarious, heartbreaking stuff that people have sent into Found over the years, I felt like they could bring it to life in magical form, and they have.
Well, let me play just a small selection or section from this musical, and this is Davy's having a weird day. As I said in my introduction, this is really the thing that happened that got the whole Found enterprise going.
Yeah.
Let's hear what it sounds like in song.
Sorry I'm late, but my car wouldn't start and my phone was dead too. But I found this weird note on my car and I wanted to show it to you. Amber has drama, really relationship drama. I bet Mario's got a side baby mama.
I don't care, dude.
You can't see that this note is amazing. It's your mistake, not mine.
No car, you're fired.
Well, I hated this job, and I'll find something better. Me and Amber will be fine.
And turn in your hat.
No! I'm keeping this hat.
No, you're not.
And your pizza sucks, too. There's something else out there that I meant to do. The is getting crazy. I'm having a weird day. I'm having a weird day.
And that's some music from Found. So Mario and Amber, I know some people have caught up with you or you've caught up with them. Ever figure out who they were?
I wish I could find Mario and Amber, the people that wrote this original, you know, this note that really sparked Found in the first place. With the Found podcast, we have been able to track down some of the people who have written some of my favorite Found notes and letters. And, you know, to me, they are celebrities. These are, you know, when you read these Found notes and you get such a window into other people's lives, you know, I'm more excited to meet a guy that wrote some shopping list that somebody sent me that I've always wondered about, you know, who wrote that, than I would be a movie star.
Well, in fact, there was this guy named Jet, right? Wasn't he part of
your
podcast
.
Who had, left a note in L.A.?
Exactly, yeah. So he had written letters to entertainment companies in L.A. Pitching himself as the Asian Oprah. He said he wanted to do what, you know, for Asian Americans, what Oprah had done for African Americans. And he wanted to be a mega famous TV talk show host. And, you know, this was Found on the ground like 15 years ago. And I've always wondered, like, what happened to Jet?
Yeah.
And so I was actually able to find him in Chicago. He's not in entertainment, but he's doing something else that's even more kind of incredible. And so meeting him, it was amazing to be sitting there with this guy that I've always wondered about,
sure.
You know, what his story was.
He's a dentist. I mean, just to add to the story, right?
Yes, you're right. Why hold back on people?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's
not just any dentist. He's a root canal specialist who works with indigent people. So homeless folks, people with mental issues that couldn't afford dental care elsewhere. He sees 12 patients a day, 12 straight root canals, and he's been doing it for years. And so he's got this really magnanimous heart.
And does he still want to be the Asian Oprah? Is that still part of his?
I think he nurses a little bit of an entertainment dream, but he, to some extent, you know, what I learned and as I talk to people is, you know, life doesn't always follow the path that we think it's going to follow. And so for Jet, he had this dream, but he's found a different path that's been equally meaningful to him.
You brought in some things to read. There's, as I said, strewn
finds.
All over.
Yeah.
You want to read some of these?
Absolutely.
Finds?
So, you know, people find these things on the ground, on the street. They send them to us from all over the country. Real Found notes. And this one came from Brooklyn. My friend found this on the street in front of her apartment, written to a guy named Delane. It says, "Dear Delane, you and I are just friends. That's the way I wish to remain. I like you, but only as a friend. I would be happy if this doesn't affect our bond as friends. Please understand, it's not because you're not handsome enough. It's just because you and I are friends and that's it. The reason you can't be my boyfriend is because I'm not as attracted to you as you are to me. To be honest, I just want us to be friends, that's all. It's your chance, it's your choice, whether you want to be my friend or not. Signed, Julia. P.S. Let's just be friends."
So I love these P.S.s.
Yeah,
you know.
The woman that found this said she wonders if Delane ever got the subtle hint that Julia just wanted to be friends.
Just wanted to be friends. You have another one
there
for
absolutely.
Us?
Well, this one came from Minneapolis, and this is kind of fascinating. This guy had typed up his monthly budget list. And I do the same thing. You know, I have to plot it out. So at the end of the month, I'm not totally broke.
Right.
This guy typed it up, lost it, and it was found and sent in to us. It says, "Monthly budget, rent $600, cell phone $50, electric gas $45, cable $60, bus taxi $60, food $500, liquor $600, laundry $30, crack $600, attorney $250, miscellaneous $250, and then savings $100. So I was thinking, you know, this is a responsible dude.
Wow.
Putting $100 away into savings every month. If he could spend a little bit less on crack and liquor, you know, he'd be golden.
Exactly.
So a lot is revealed through these notes, you know, whether it's, you know, it just people are totally unself-conscious when they've written these things because they never expected anyone else to read them.
I went to your site. Here's a not-to-do list. Do not spend money on anything except clothing for winter, grocery items, Sarah's birthday dinner, sushi, and then the movie Kill Bill. Save all other money.
Absolutely. That's a great to-not-do list. Right. Well, I love to-do lists because I'm a list maker myself.
Are you?
And so
I make lists and then I lose them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they may turn up in Found Magazine.
Exactly.
This is a one-item to-do list, Marty, found in Las Vegas on an elevator at a casino. It just says, must win money. And then here's one from Oregon. It says, to-do, turn in library books, find out about college, mail dad's stuff, pay bills in advance, write Crystal, hide guns.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
And then one from Connecticut. Kind of in a kid's handwriting, and you can see the first couple are crossed out. It says, things to do, get a new skateboard deck, that's crossed out. Think of band names, crossed out. Get lawn mowing service going, crossed out. The last two, still yet to be done. Hook up with Jen, make it to the sixth grade.
Oh, that warms my heart.
Yeah.
Let me read a couple of comments. One from Tim, he says, I do lists every day. I have for years in order to keep track. To-do lists work for me. I write them either at night or early in the morning with my coffee. A comment from Joan, yes, I write daily and long-term to-do lists, but rarely get through all of those stuff on the list. Lots to carry over. Crossing out done items is the best, though.
Yeah,
the idea of like
right.
a check or saying, yes, that is accomplished.
Some of the finds are mysterious and cryptic and bizarre. And you know, each one is like a fragment of a story. And it's up to you to piece together the rest of it. Whether it's a receipt that says, this is a receipt that was found in Detroit. It says, mm-hmm. gun, there are four items on it. Gun, ski mask, nerds.
Wow.
And but this is one that I've always wondered about, and maybe your listeners will have insights. So if anybody has an idea of what this could possibly mean, it was found on the ground in San Francisco, a short little find. It just says, more buns, more cups, less lies. More buns, more cups, less lies.
It's almost a haiku,
yeah,
you know, when you look at it that
exactly.
way.
I'd be curious if somebody has an explanation of what is the story behind that one.
We're almost having a break here, but is there something you have learned about human nature, do you think, from the notes people either leave behind or got discarded or fell out of their pocket?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the more of these found notes I see, I really feel like I'm getting like this powerful glimpse into all humanity. And I think the found musical, the play at the Philadelphia Theater Company, does a great job of conveying this sense of kind of the That there's more that we have in common than that we are different. You know, like, you know, you might see two people from a different, totally different parts of the world, but they may use different kinds of language to communicate themselves, different slang, and yet the core emotions, the core experience of what it is to be human, are the same. And that I find that to be beautiful. And actually.
You know what? Hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break. And that's Davy Rothbart, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, creator of Found Magazine, several Found books. He's one of the creators of this new musical called, yes, Found. And it's at the Suzanne Roberts Theater in Philadelphia. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. And again, opening up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking with Davy Rothbart about his Found enterprise, a magazine, podcast, books, now a musical here in Philadelphia at the Suzanne Roberts Theater through December 11th. And again, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Davy, let me have you read a couple of more notes that you have there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to give love to, first of all, the play is amazing. I saw it last night, and I absolutely loved it.
It's about you, I should say.
Yeah. Well, it involves me and my friends piecing the first Found magazine together. And to me, the finds are the star of the show. These are real pieces of paper that were found all over the country, sent to us, and they sing, you know, these beautiful songs. It's really it's just so incredible and really worth checking out. And I want to give love too quickly to. There's four bookshops in Philadelphia that have carried Found Magazine, and we want to be sure to give them some love because they've done a great job of getting Found Magazine into people's hands. Joseph Fox in Rittenhouse Square, that's a great bookshop. The Wooden Shoe on South Street. You probably know them.
Yep.
And Brickbat Books over there. Is that Queen Village over there?
I think
so. Yeah. And then Head House Books. So Brickbat, Head House, Wooden Shoe, and Joseph Fox. That's where people locally can pick up a copy of Found Magazine. Of course, if they find something and want to share it with us, they can go to our website, which is foundmagazine.com. And my parents' address in Michigan, that's where the finds are sent. They can see the address there to send their finds in. But yeah,
so this is a family enterprise.
Well, they're the first. I've moved around a lot. They have a permanent address. So that's
right.
Why
so
we
that
always
helps.
Have people send the finds there. And my friends Sarah Locke and Brandy Wicks, they go over and pick up the mail and show me the best ones. And it's incredible to open these finds. This is one that was found in Providence, Rhode Island, Marty.
Wow.
A woman came out one day after kind of a storm, and she found this note in her front yard, also kind of in kids' handwriting. And
sure.
It says at the top, Adventure Club. How to get into the club, you need to know how to climb a fence. You need to like adventure. And then the rules. No messing up the club. Don't bring anything in without permission from Shane or Ethan. You have to be nice to squirrels. And finally, most important, you can't tell anyone where or what the club is. So the woman that found it, she thought she might know who Shane and Ethan were. Just some of the local neighborhood kids. She'd see them running around with their friends. She went up to them on the street a few days later and started asking them about the Adventure Club and reciting all these top secret rules. So the kids are shocked. Like, how does she know all this classified information? She told them that her dog, named Kismet, had overheard them making up the rules. The kids were speechless. And as they were walking away, she heard the youngest one say to his friend, "Whoa, Kismet heard us." So, you know, years have passed.
I'm interested in the squirrels part.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she said she still likes to think that these kids are very secretive around any dog after that.
Let me read a couple more comments.
Yeah.
An email from Warren: has the internet slowed the supply of notes? I was curious about that.
Well, that's
as well.
That's a great question. You know, as technology evolves, the ways that people can find stuff evolve. So somebody may send an email and then print that out and lose that. Somebody may find an old cell phone that has 100 photographs still on it. And of course, we're careful to change the names mm-hmm. and phone numbers when we print these finds in the magazine or in the musical. There's a song in the musical that I love because I think it nails the question that this listener had. It's called "Write It All Down," and what it gets at is that there are times where you will put pen to paper. You know, if a marriage is ending after 15 years, if you're writing to a son who lives across the country and you haven't seen him in a long time, and so when people choose to write it down. That's the stuff that is found, and that's the stuff where that's the most heartfelt and meaningful.
I mean, in certain ways, you get to see that probably the best, the worst, but also the ordinary in that, you know, people write notes all the time.
Yeah, some of the stuff is totally mundane, and yet there still can be magic in it. You know, there can still be just the unexpected because, yeah, my mom likes to call it actually people watching on paper.
Ah.
Because, you know, people are absolutely raw and revealing, and they might be writing a to-do list or maybe a journal entry, something they thought no one else would see. So you're seeing them at their most naked, and there's a voyeuristic aspect, of course, but I believe that a certain degree of voyeurism is healthy. You know, we're surrounded by strangers all the time, walking down the street, sitting on the bus. I think it's natural to have a curiosity, you know, and to see, you know, that other people around us are human just like us.
Has this made you more observant, looking for, finding notes, bits and pieces of messages?
Absolutely, because I'm the kind of person, sometimes I get caught up in my own head thinking, you know, where are my keys? Why won't this girl call me back? Why is my boss mad at me? And yet, walking around, looking on the ground, keeping your eyes to the ground, it pulls you out of your head. And the stuff you can find is amazing, but I find that I'm more present in my everyday spaces. You know, I'm more present in the world. I start looking at people's faces sitting across from me on the bus, maybe engaging them in conversation. There's so much to be found out there once we start looking for it.
In the musical, we watch the evolution of Found, but we also see that Hollywood gets interested with the idea of a TV show. Did that truly happen?
Yes.
Really? With the idea, at least initially, that, or perhaps in your mind, that you would be the host of this thing?
Yeah. I mean, I live in LA now, and I really love it. In some ways, it gets a bad rap, but there's also can be a Hollywood mentality sometimes to take something like Found Magazine, and you know they say let's turn it into a TV show, and sometimes it can be a little bit lowest common denominator. Where the you know to me Found is celebrating our collective weirdness. You know, it's it's honoring the people who wrote these notes and letters, not making fun of them.
In fact, weirdness is a kind of through line, I would say,
yeah,
through this musical.
Yeah, so whenever anybody takes, you know, the simplest way you can look at this stuff, and I think the way that some TV people had looked at it in the past was, you know, it was almost like making fun of the people that wrote this. And look, when I laugh at these notes, I'm laughing at myself. I've written the same pitiful love note 100 times myself.
Well, and I guess we have to give a I think the card-carrying example of weird is, of course, National Public Radio, NPR.
Yeah.
I mean, WBEZ in Chicago, seems you need to give a shout-out to them for
absolutely
their interest in what you were doing at the
well,
time.
Well, sure. So, I mean, right in the early days of Found, I was living in Chicago, and, you know, I found that Mario and Amber note and made, you know, 50 copies of a magazine. But Ira Glass from This American Life, you know, he kind of caught wind of what we were doing. He had one of the first copies of Found magazine that we made, you know, really handmade in my apartment, you know, collated and stapled. And so he invited me on tour with himself, David Sedaris, Sarah Vowell, you know, all these people who, Starley Kine and Jonathan Goldstein, you know,
oh
people whose work I just always loved, and invited me to share these finds, you know, at these enormous theaters and share the magic of these finds. And so him and WBEZ, you know, were kind of the patron saints of Found Magazine in a way, because of course, once we were sharing these finds on This American Life, people were learning what we were up to from all over the country and really across the world, sending us these finds. You know, Found Magazine and the Found Musical, for that matter, only exist because we've met thousands of kindred spirits around the country, people who are similarly curious about the people we share the world with, people who take that time, if they see something laying on the ground, to pick it up and look at it and see if it's something interesting and send it into us.
Hmm.
So we've been, it was a great gift for them to, for Ira and This American Life and WBEZ to take interest and kind of help spread the word.
And again, that's Davy Rothbart, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, one of the creators of this new musical that's here in Philadelphia at the Suzanne Roberts Theater. It's called Found. He is the creator of Found Magazine. He's written several books, Found books, if I can call it that. And we are talking about some of his finds and certainly talking about what has gone into this musical and his career. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email. I see a bunch here. Radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. There's also a couple that found a baby. Do I have that right? I mean,
yeah.
Talk about a find.
Unbelievable story. And we featured this on the third episode of the Found podcast just a couple months ago. A guy in New York City, 15 years ago, he's heading to his boyfriend's place on the subway, gets off at the stop, and he thinks he catches sight of something moving underneath a bench as he's leaving the subway platform. Goes back and takes a second look, and it's a baby.
Wow.
Wrapped up in an old sweatshirt. So he's, what do I do? You know, he picks it up, finds a police officer, and thinks that's probably the end of it. Then he's called into a court hearing where they're sort of deciding the baby's fate. You know, is he going to be a ward of the state? You know, and the judge out of nowhere says, well, Danny, do you want to adopt the baby? And he says, yes. And his boyfriend, Pete, is sitting next to him. And he's like, wait, what?
We just adopted a baby?
We hadn't talked about getting a cat. Now, you know, they adopted this boy and 17 years later, you know, they've raised this amazing boy. He's about to graduate high school.
You met him?
Yeah, I have met him. Yeah, and so it's an episode of the Found podcast that I think people say brings them to tears, and it brought me to tears hearing these guys tell this really inspiring story of so you can find notes and letters that give you insight into other people's lives, or in this case, finding an actual baby transform their lives too.
I know that you wrote an obit when Mr. Rogers died. It was in the New York Times. I printed it out.
Mm.
And you describe being a little kid. Your older brother actually wrote to Mr. Rogers.
Yep.
And Mr. Rogers invited your family, you and your brother and your family, to spend a day with him on Nantucket.
It was kind of insane because, you know, I love Mr. Rogers like any kid. And then there we were at his house, you know, just like and he had all the puppets from the land of make-believe. And
it's
so
like a kid's dream come true.
It was really insane. And I mean, and apparently we weren't the only kids that he had done this with. You know, he was very, he told me, I ended up going back for This American Life and meeting him, and I interviewed my neighbors in Chicago about the conflicts they have with each other, and then played the tapes for Mr. Rogers and let him kind of mediate their disputes. And he was an incredible guy. He told me that he would spend an hour every morning writing letters to, you know, kids would write him letters from around the country. Mm-hmm. He would sit down and write 10 letters back every day.
You included something that he said when you went back to talk to Mr. Rogers, and he said, perhaps we think we won't find another human being inside this person. This was like dealing with a difficult neighbor.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps we think that there are some people in this world who I can't ever communicate with, and so I'll just give up before I try. And how sad it is to think that we would give up on another creature who's just like us. And I have to say, I scored that thinking about the sort of difficult, contentious times that we're in.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the country has, in my mind, you know, been ripped apart in a certain way by what happened last week. It devastated me personally. You know, my mom is someone she's from Philadelphia, and she's fought for equal rights and you know, causes that I really believe in, you know, her whole life, and I just know how troubled she was by it. But to me, these found notes, in a weird way, they are an antidote to what's going on, because the more you look at these found notes, the more you recognize what we have in common as opposed to our differences. Mm. And Orville Mendoza is one of the actors in the Found musical, and he had this revelation he shared with me that, you know, doing this play, putting this musical on, to him has made him feel more united, more close to people around the country, even people who we may feel are quite different from us. Because when you read these found notes and you get a sense of all these people's stories, you can't help but feel a connection with them.
Let me see what Angel from Westchester has to say. Angel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was so excited about the show because I have for a number of years collected pictures of people I don't know, like old pictures, black and white. And one of my favorite pictures was the time that I found a woman. She was standing in front of a bar, and there was a mirror behind her. And there was a man next to her, and she was holding this huge rifle. And I've always wondered what in the world
yes.
that picture was from.
Yeah.
Then the other thing I was going to tell you was one time that I had, I went to a yard sale, and I found an old scrapbook. And in the old scrapbook, it had been done by a Girl Scout leader, I guess. There was a straw that was pasted in there. And then it had a little note, and it said, "Today we had straws with our milk."
A little snapshot into somebody's life.
Oh, my gosh. I was so touched by that because I thought how much we take for granted straws.
Sure.
And then here was this little paper straw, you know, the little ones there, and I thought that's wonderful.
Well, Angel, I appreciate the call. Davey, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that is a great story. It really illuminates something important, which is that, yeah, even the most simple and mundane item or found note, you know, can tell a story of its own. I love hearing that you've been collecting this stuff for so long. I hope you and anyone else listening who has found stuff over the years will share it with us, you know, that they'll send it into Found so we can then share it out with everybody else.
Do you have some more things to share with us in the couple minutes we have left?
Yeah, this is a beautiful letter that was found outside Chicago, and it's a kid writing to his mom. Let me read it to you first, and then I'll tell you more about where it was found, because I actually met the woman that found it. So it just says, it says, "Dear Mom, I miss you. I really wish you were here. There's been a lot of bad stuff in my life. I'm sure you already know that. There's also been some really good things, like Justin. He's my best friend, and so is Bethany. Hey, Mom, guess what's the best part of all? There's a girl. Her name is Jenna. We've been dating for about a month and a half now. I love her so much. This girl is wonderful, Mom. She helps me through a lot. I would die for this girl, Mom. I love her so much, and she's scared that we're not going to see each other when I move, but I promised her we would see each other just like normal. Well, I got my license this summer so I could be out here every day. So yeah, I got to go. I love you so much, Mom. I'll write you again. Bye. Your son, Colin. P.S. Trevor misses you too." And now, Marty, the woman that found this told me the story of where she found it. And she explained to me that she was at a cemetery. And she saw, caught up in the highest branches of a tree, was a balloon with a ribbon coming down. And tied to the ribbon was a piece of paper. So she actually scaled up the tree to pull down the note, this note right here.
Wow.
And you can picture this kid like going to visit his mom at the cemetery, writing her this note and sending it up to her, you know, in like a balloon up to heaven. And so for me, it's ones like this one that just move and affect me so much, you know, that make me want to pick up every piece of paper I see floating down the street blowing down the alleyway, you know, hanging from a balloon in a tree. And I hope people listening will send in their finds too, so we can just share them back out with everybody else.
Well, on that note, my thanks to you, Davey Rothbart, for joining us today on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure. I can't wait for people to see Found the Musical. It's amazing. So.
And again, Davey Rothbart, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. And yes, the Philadelphia Theater Company is presenting Found at the Suzanne Roberts Theater, and that's through December 11th. And I should add that our guest, Davey Rothbart, began collecting these letters and messages almost 20 years ago, a magazine, several books, a podcast, and yes, now a musical. In fact, we want to close things out with just a short section from one of the songs in this musical. This is Mikey, a friend, reading a letter that Davey wrote him years ago. In the note, Davey encourages Mikey to stay weird. Let's give it a listen.
Dear Mikey, I think you are a very interesting person. You are different from everybody else, but you are turning the same. My suggestion to you, stay weird, stay weird, stay weird, stay weird at this school. All the unpopular people are the same, and all the popular people are the same. You are turning the same. My suggestion to you, stay weird, stay weird. If everybody is the same, then nobody will be different. I think you will have a much better life if you keep being weird. Think about it. If you become the same, you won't be anything much when you are older. You will just be normal. But if you keep being weird, can't stop acting so normal, then you will stand out. Maybe.
I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The Southern Poverty Law Center says there has been an uptick in racist and anti-Semitic vandalism, harassment, and violence since last week's election. When told about it on 60 Minutes last Sunday, Donald Trump told Leslie Stahl that he was saddened to hear it, and he turned to the camera and said, "Stop it." More than 100 African-American students at the University of Pennsylvania were targeted with violent messages and images, including threats of lynching. The FBI said hate crimes against Muslims increased last year to their highest level in about a decade. We asked Leonore Carpenter to join us on Radio Time. She is Associate Professor of Law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. And Leonore, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Martha.
You're welcome. Do hate crimes, and we will talk about what they are and what they aren't, but the level of reaction that we've seen in the last week or so, do they tend to come in waves?
Well, I think they can. I think that there are, you know, there's sort of a level of hate violence that one expects to see. I think that the FBI keeps statistics on this that are collected from local law enforcement agencies, and you can access those statistics. I think that folks who are experts in hate crimes will tell you that sometimes they do. Sometimes you can see a spike in reaction to a national event that affects people deeply. I was listening to an interview with Mark Potok from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and he said something that surprised me, which was that there is – obviously they have found a notable spike in hate crimes since the election and during the electoral cycle. But he also said that the last time this happened was – when Barack Obama was elected, which I found very, very interesting. So, you know, there can certainly be catalysts for hate crimes, but they're not necessarily what one would expect, or they're not always sort of the same thing, right?
Well, I think we should also understand what a hate crime is. I mean, clearly in this country, we have a First Amendment. People are allowed to say things that might offend other people. How does the law define a hate crime?
Right. Well, I mean, that's very difficult, right? So, you know, one of the things that we hear culturally is this discussion about hate speech, right? And a lot of the discussion about hate speech stems from college campuses trying to figure out how to make everybody feel comfortable and safe in a college environment. Hate speech is not something that can necessarily be regulated by the government because we have a First Amendment,
right?
So we start from the principle that we are allowed in this country – even if it is uncomfortable or difficult or insulting, we are allowed to disagree with one another. And we hold that principle really very deeply as something that is foundational to our civil society, that we actually have to allow one another to say things that we find very objectionable or even, really, really morally abhorrent.
When does it cross the line?
Right. And so then the question is, well, we can't stop each other from saying things that we find insulting or we undermine sort of the foundations that our democracy was built on. But there has to be a place where that stops. And what most states have decided is to set up a system that's similar to what we have here in Pennsylvania, where if there is already a crime being committed – and the crime is being committed because of a bias motivation, right, that crime can be treated more seriously. So you have to understand, right, that it's not just I don't like you because of the characteristic that you have. It's I am vandalizing your property, right? Mm. You've seen this rise in the spray painting of swastikas, right? The spray painting of anything on someone's property is a criminal act, right? That's already an act of vandalism. What the Pennsylvania hate crimes law says and what most do is if you're doing that for a purpose that is essentially motivated by hatred of a particular group, right, that we treat that more seriously, and that's potentially subject to greater penalty.
Let me pick up on that. Let me also give out our phone number. Talking with Leonore Carpenter, she's an associate professor of law at Temple University. And we asked her to join us today in Radio Times to help us understand what hate crimes are, what they aren't, how they might intersect with hate speech. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. So let me take the example of the African-American students at the University of Pennsylvania. They were targeted. It was a website with violent messages, violent images, including things like lynching or threats of lynching. Mm-hmm. Does that cross the line into a hate crime? And how do you see that?
Well, I don't have all the facts in front of me. I'm going to give you a lawyer answer, right? Like, I don't know precisely what was said or precisely when it was said. But I will tell you this, that there is a place where speech becomes potentially criminally actionable. There's a couple of places. One is where you threaten someone, right? It's okay to say, I don't like you. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to say, I'm going to kill you, right? The other thing that I think of, and this is something that I dealt with a lot, with my own clients who were victims of hate violence, is harassment, right? One of the definitions of harassment, at least in the Pennsylvania Crimes Code, is, a pattern of behavior that has no purpose except to essentially alarm or annoy or upset someone. So if you say, I don't like you because of this characteristic, that's one thing. But if you follow someone down the street and you mm-hmm. follow them home and you're screaming at them over and over again, that could be a criminal act because there's conduct involved there, right? It's not just I'm talking to you. It's I am actually following you around and saying horrible things.
Words and actions somehow together.
Right. So either words that are themselves really very threatening or words that are actions combined can rise to that level.
But this is where it gets complicated and potentially interesting because a cyber threat, you can definitely feel threatened if someone is threatening your life, but they're not – maybe that is the action, but they're not there next to you with their fist raised.
Right. I don't think that someone has to be right next to you in order for that to constitute mm-hmm. a threat. I'll leave the specifics of that case up to the prosecutors who will hopefully be looking into this.
Right.
Something.
Right. What is the appropriate, legal response to something like this? People have the right to feel safe in mm-hmm. their life, in the world. And again, people have the right to say things that other people might find offensive, hateful.
Right. And that's really difficult.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think it's important to remember is that speech that doesn't feel threatening to someone who is not in the minority can feel like a threat to someone who is a member of a minority. That's something that as a white person I had to learn by listening to classmates in law school who were people of color when we were talking about First Amendment issues, you know, and I was like, oh, this speech isn't threatening, you know, this is just someone expressing their belief, and that's really important to the foundations of a society. That's not necessarily how that same speech is taken by someone who is a person of color or a member of the LGBT community. That person can feel like they are being threatened because of the history that they have. Sometimes the reaction, the correct response is a legal response, and sometimes it's not. I think that one of the things that we have to remember is we can't just have the law swoop down and fix everything, right? People respond to cues that they get from society. I think what we're seeing right now is that there are groups of people who feel that they have permission, right? And that's permission that they didn't always feel that they had. You know, I've heard a lot of, you know, liberals think that that there wasn't racism before now. Of course there was racism before now. You know, Donald Trump didn't cause this. Well, of course Donald Trump didn't cause this. And of course there was racism and anti-Semitism and homophobia and xenophobia before this election, and there will be after. But what has happened is that for better or worse, there's been something about the tenor of the dialogue over this electoral cycle that has given people who otherwise would not have acted out the sense that they have permission to do so, right? And you see, I think that that is proved by the number of these actions that you've seen taking place in schools, high schools, Council Rock High School, one high school over from where I went to high school in Bucks County, and college campuses all over the country, right? I think what that tells you is young people are seeking to figure out what they can and can't do, right? What can I say? What is not appropriate to say? The solution to that is not a legal solution. It is a social solution, and it is a solution whereby we as members of our society have to find ways to send very clear messages in the aftermath of this incredibly divisive election. We have to send messages to the people in our communities that everyone is welcome, first of all, that everyone is welcome, regardless of what they look like, regardless of, you know, what their religion is, regardless of how they voted. Everyone is welcome here. And the secondary, equally important message is hate is not welcome here. Hate is not welcome here.
Well, I know some of these schools have brought in people to help sort of help the students understand it, to be able to imagine someone's experience that's not your own, for instance, mm-hmm. a kind of empathy there. And it has felt about the campaign that there was a kind of revolt against political correctness, feeling mm-hmm. like I'm allowed, I'm entitled to say these kinds of things. And then there's the question of when do you go too far? What is too far?
Right. I'm not a sociologist, but I am an American, you know, and I am an LGBT person. I'm proud of that fact, but I live in a society, you know, that is very diverse. And so I'll just give you my opinion.
Sure.
I think that it goes too far when it makes other people in your community feel that they do not belong. Right. I mean, we are entitled in this country to vote for whoever it is that we voted for. We are entitled to hold opinions that are dramatically different from the opinions of our neighbors. But I think we have to understand, all of us, regardless of what side of the political spectrum we are on, is that because we live in a representative democracy, we are cells in a body. Right. And when we attack one another, we're basically causing the democratic equivalent of an autoimmune disease. That politics is not the same as football. There's not one team that is fighting another team, and if you win, it's a victory. You know, when you defeat and humiliate people in your community, you are defeating and humiliating your community. So I think that there is a line that has to be drawn in our civil discourse that says, you know, when you start talking about other people in your community not belonging, you have crossed a line. And as a democratic society that is pluralistic, that cannot be tolerated.
Well, I'm thinking about the bully pulpit that any president has. We know certainly President Obama has dealt with some very specific issues. We have President-elect Trump. Now, the only comment that I've seen was when he was asked about it on 60 Minutes this past Sunday. Does he have a responsibility to deal with the people who voted for him, who support him, who somehow feel empowered?
Well, I think Donald Trump is going to have to learn a lot of things about being about the position that he's in, right? I mean, this is a person who has been a CEO. He has been, you know, very proud of his sort of straight-talking nature. Being a CEO may have some similarities to being the president, but there's one really important place that it does not, right? The president does set a social tone for the country. And I think Donald Trump maybe right now is learning that his words matter more than they used to. And I do think he's an intelligent man, and I hope that he will learn that. I think he said a lot of things on the campaign trail in order to win, because he's very focused on winning at all costs. I don't know if he believes some of the things that he said, and I don't think any of us do. I don't think the people who voted for him necessarily know, you know, whether he means some of the things that he said. But I do know that there are people who have selectively picked out the things that he has said and really, really tried to amplify those things. And those people are white nationalists, right? That may not be something that Donald Trump or certainly people who voted for him intended, but that may have been an unintended consequence of this election. You know, you opened the door and something came in, and now you have to deal with the fact that something has come in. What will you do, right?
Let me get Jean from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Jean, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, one of the – I'm good. One of the emotions that I felt, and I know a lot of people like me, so I'm an African-American male with four boys. We felt like after Trump was elected that we were actually afraid to go to work the next day, especially me. I work a lot in the South Philadelphia area, which is notoriously known – for a lot of racist rhetoric and activities, and I didn't know what to expect going to work. So I actually ended up going in like 4 hours later. Wow. So I had to get myself together just to go into work because I was scared to death.
Well, you know what, Gene?
And now that
Gene, let me ask you only, and I'm looking at the clock here only because we're nearly out of time. Once you got to work, how was it?
Once I got to work, it was fine. I realized that the majority of people in Philadelphia voted for Hillary Clinton, and it wasn't all that bad. But just the rhetoric that we had to deal with during the campaign was so damaging psychologically that you just kind of didn't know what to do and what to expect. And even with what we see now with the country at large, you know, you're even afraid to go to some places because you see what's going on. And I'm actually surprised at what's going on with the University of Pennsylvania. But, yeah.
Jean, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Leonore Carpenter a chance to respond. Leonore?
Yeah, well, I think – thank you. Thank you for calling, Jean, and thank you for being honest about how you felt. And I think that that's reflective of the way a lot of people felt. That sense of fear is something that I think is surprising. A number of – you know, a large portion of people who voted for Donald Trump, they did not expect that because they're looking at this election from a completely different perspective. What I would say is listen to Jean. Listen to what Jean just said. And if you live in a community, right, where, you know, you're reflecting and you're not sure that Jean would feel comfortable in your community, think about what you can do to make your community seem not just, you know, sort of tacitly welcoming, but actually overtly affirming of people's presence in your community. That's something small that you can do, but it's huge to those of us who are in some sort of minority that may feel targeted.
Jean, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. An email from Gary talking about coming with those rights come responsibility. Leonore Carpenter, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Associate Professor of Law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. She previously served as legal director at Equality Advocates Pennsylvania, worked with victims of hate crimes and domestic violence. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoing. Thanks for joining us.